When you have to stop but don't really want to, stop at BP. Because BP has everything you need to keep it going. Fuel to keep the adventures going. The BP Me app to keep the savings and the commutes going. Snacks and drinks to keep the crew going. And the BP Me Rewards Visa to keep the rewards going and going and going. A stop at BP isn't a stop at all. Keep it going.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another edition of the Niner Noise Podcast, part of the Fansided Podcast Network. My name is Robert Morrison, a contributor at NinerNoise.com. And here with me once again to as we enter the true doldrums of the NFL season, the one time where things are not happening, fellow contributor, Mr. Akshaz Divadula. Akshaz, how we doing, man?
Robert, we're doing pretty good. You're absolutely right. It's starting to get pretty slow out here in the NFL world, which means I feel like the Niners are about to do something big because there's never a rest. But, you know, the content wheel keeps churning and football happens to exist 24/7, 365 days a year with how the NFL set it up. So yeah, it's always something interesting to talk about. I think, like, what was it? For some reason, Chris Sims mentioned something about, like, the Niners winning if Jordan Love was on this instead of Brock Purdy. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, like, it's the middle of June. What are you talking about right now? So there's always something to talk about.
Yeah. I don't want to hang out on that point because it's a terribly stupid thing to say. Because it's like, did you watch the Super Bowl and the conclusion you came to is that if the quarterback play had been better, the 49ers would have won? That's the conclusion that you came to? I'm not sure that works out. Also, Jordan Love threw two interceptions in the NFC division game that ultimately led to his team losing. So there's that. While this is technically the doldrums, we're in the middle, the 40-day period in between the end of organized team activities, mini camp, and training camp, which starts at the middle part of July. I'm not sure that we actually have exact dates on it, but it's roughly a 40-day break. So it's really the only time when theoretically there's nothing going on. But it's also been a while since we did an episode. So a bunch of things have happened that we haven't gotten a chance to talk about. And it's mostly money related. So we could label this. This one could be called the money episode because the 49ers have both been spending and not spending and maybe spending in the future money. So there we go. Those are the things that we're gonna touch on. And so I think just based on that alone, I think people would be able to figure out kind of where this is going. We'll start off with the easy one. And that was, I believe, the first sort of mini ball to fall in all this. And that was Juwan Jennings receiving a contract extension. It's kind of weird. The way the 49ers announced it was they announced it as a 1-year extension, which it technically, I guess, is, because in order to get the first extension, he had to sign his restricted free agent tender. And so I think roughly the way it works out, and I'm looking at SpoTrack right now as I'm talking about this, they call it a 2-year, $15.39 million contract. So roughly a $7.6 million average. What it does, it means he'll play, I guess the way that it works is he'll play 2024 on what essentially was the RFA tender minus some money. The cap hit is about $2.7 million, and then in 2025 it'll be a $4.25 million cap hit, and most of the And then there's some, as they often do with these contracts, there's some void years and stuff like that after that. So there's like $1 million signing bonuses and prorated stuff that will happen after that. So I guess theoretically at that point, they'd either be happy to kind of take on what little of the dead money there will be There's really 3 million of dead money in 2026 as it stands. But after that, some just like money that they might have to pay that won't seem like much of anything. So Akshaz, what was the reaction to this one? This is kind of how this is going to work. I think so. This was it does lower the restricted tender, which was right around what was closing in on 5 million for this season. In the end, he gets a lot more money than he would have just signing that restricted free agent tender. So it'll be interesting to see how that kind of works out. But what was your thought about this in general?
A couple of different thoughts. One, I was a little surprised by the contract. I will say, I think the money is reasonable for what Juwan Jennings brings to the 49ers. And I think that, you know, with the way that the Niners are kind of like transitioning as an offense, wrote an article about it for the site, kind of talking about how this is a harbinger of seeing that this is really going to become Brock Purdy's team.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to start seeing a lot more like focus on getting Purdy weapons and kind of building around his talents. So I think it can work there. I'm expecting the Niners to run more three wide receiver sets in this year and future years. But that seems like such an interesting transition to me for a team that's been so reliant on the ground game. Mm-hmm. And this isn't to say that like suddenly they're going to air it out all the time, but it's a pretty rich investment, I think, given the propensity that like Jennings plays right now. So I see it being a really interesting thing is I think this basically it's short enough to where it doesn't really like mean that anything's locked in. Everything's on the same timeline now, essentially. It's yeah. like within the next 2 years, basically every major contract has an out or expires, and then the Niners are going to reshape this whole thing. But right. I can't see the Niners coming to terms with this contract and then turning around and having both Ayuk and Samuel on the team come next year. Like, this kind of feels like the nail in the coffin to me anyway, on like both number one now and number 11 being Niners in the 2025-2026 NFL season.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that was kind of where we thought this was all going. Eventually, I think most of the players are pretty clear on it. It will be interesting to see, and we'll talk about Ayuk later, if that contract situation continues to stall and they do something different with it, if that means something different for like a Deebo Samuel or something like that. But that can be a different conversation that we can get into later. I'm pretty much there with you. It's a decent turnaround. It's a decent amount of money, and it's not a horrible contract for a guy who's going to be your third wide receiver. That of course supposes that he is going to be your third wide receiver. Because I think there's a very real possibility that by the end of the season that he's really more your fourth guy. If Ricky Pearsall is the player that you want him to be, and are hoping that he becomes, and if, you know, assuming Brandon Ayuk and Deebo Samuel are both there, but that of course only means for 2024, and in 2025, it could be that Juwan Jennings is back to being your third guy, with either Samuel or Ayuk on the way out. So we'll see how that kind of plays out. So that was the first contract that was kind of out in the open. The second was another extension that was kind of interesting in terms of the timing of it, but it goes to Christian McCaffrey. So McCaffrey had two more years on the original deal that he signed with Carolina. What was that? 2019 when he signed that deal? 2020. When he signed the extension, the 4-year, $64 million extension with the Panthers. He had two more years left on that for this year and the year after that. But the problem was from McCaffrey's perspective is that he didn't have any guaranteed money left. And that didn't give him any. And so there wasn't the sort of the cushion of like, you're definitely going to make this much money over the rest of the year. So this contract, again, it was announced as essentially a 2-year, $38 million extension on top of the 2 years that he already had left. So it essentially boils down to 4 years, Let's see what's the numbers that they're throwing out. I don't know. Four years with guarantees. I'm trying to find the number off the top of my head. It's pretty good guaranteed. He'll get 24 on the on this $24 million. There we go, in new guaranteed money. And it pushes his restricted free agency out to 2028. Similarly, gets his cap hit from for this upcoming season down. It was going to be significant, a fairly significant number, and he's down to just a hair over $6.5 million on the cap hit this year. That number does, of course, go up as the seasons go by, capping out in the final year of the deal at a $25 million cap hit. So at that point, the Niners will be again thinking about, like, what do you do with a 31-year-old running back? And I guess they'll have three more seasons and decide what they want to do there. There is, according to Spotrac, a potential out after leading into the 2026 season that would leave an $8.5 million dead cap hit on the Niners' books. So if things go real south real fast, essentially they gave him $24 million now. And he plays the exact same number of years that they anticipated that he was going to. But if things continue to go well, then he's got two more years on at the end of it. So I think, I don't know. It seems like a good move to me, but I don't know.
Yeah. I think the timing is odd. This is the only thing to me, especially with them being like very much locked into this, like, I don't want to say ugly because it's not ugly, but like, very like long contract like talks with Ayuk, and then to turn around and immediately be like, oh yeah, Christian, we can find some money for you. I think optically it's a little interesting, but mm-hmm. I agree. I think it's not a terrible move. It's an interesting way to like approach team building, which the Niners, you know, they're like super, super fascinating when it comes to what they value. I think they might be the most like backwards team in the NFL in that way. But giving McCaffrey a raise on top of his like league-leading RB salary, to me, initially I was like, this seems unnecessary. But the more I thought about it, the more I realized I kind of see the direction. And I also think there were some whispers that like McCaffrey wasn't showing up to OTAs. He wasn't showing up to minicamp. So unlike, you know, some other players who might take these things public, he might have been more privately discussing his like contract frustrations. And, you know, the Niners, one thing you can say about their use of McCaffrey is that he's going to earn every single penny of that contract. There's no rest for him. So I think it's great. I think he absolutely unlocked the 49ers offense to another level. I think with more another year and more familiarity in the system, with Shanahan having more time to kind of think about the ways he wants to use him, he'll be even more potent. So I agree. I think it's a good contract extension. I was just a little surprised when it came out.
Yeah, I agree. It does. I'm sure Brandon Ayuk is probably looking at that and going, well, okay, well, why? Now, granted, it's a little bit of a different animal. We're talking about a 2-year extension for a relatively low amount of money, as opposed to the nearly $100 million guarantee that I'm sure Brandon Ayuk is going to be, that is looking for, given the way the contracts are going for wide receivers. So it's a different money, price point, if you will, for sure. But I think to your earlier point about the whole, like, they're turning the corner and starting to think about like, what is this team going to look like when Brock Purdy isn't able to be surrounded by as many all pros as he is now, you know, somebody, when he gets his contract extension next year, somebody's going to have to take the hit. You know, you talk about, or, you know, you're not gonna be able to keep both receivers, yada, yada. But, I think even if you're in a situation where you have McCaffrey and you have one of the other of Brandon Ayuk and Deebo Samuel, and you still have George Kittle, and you still have, and then Brock Purdy, I think your offense is still going to be in pretty good shape, even if you're having to rely on younger guys or lower price point guys in other positions, for sure. So I think you're right. I think that he is such a key cog in making this offense like take a step up that it would have been silly to get into a dispute with him and be like, okay, well, we're gonna quibble with you over relatively. I mean, he's the best player at his position, so and there's really no doubt about that. So making it a problem, I think, is would have been not smart. Speaking of McCaffrey, this was also announced recently that he is going to be the cover player for the next edition of Madden Football. Akshaz, I believe you've mentioned a couple of times that you're not you were a you played Madden at one point, but are not really a big into it anymore. So do we have any thoughts about McCaffrey on the cover?
Robert, I appreciate that sentiment because I think the time I spend playing video games would be much better off if I wasn't really into it anymore. I think it's really cool. I think Matt Barrows had a really interesting article about it on The Athletic, just talking about how long it's been since a 49er has been on the cover. I think it's been like 24 years and Garrison Hurst was on the international release.
Right. Yeah.
This is the first time that like a 49er has been on the domestic like cover, which is insane. But when you think about it, given when Madden kind of started, mm-hmm. also kind of makes sense.
I guess. Been a lot of bad years during that time. I think the closest that they got was, I think there was like conversations, like maybe Colin Kaepernick as a possibility during his heyday. But yeah, it is kind of strange that as long as this team has been around, another, you know, one of the important teams in the NFL, that they've not had a player. But it also stands to reason that a lot of the time that the game has existed, they've just not been very good, and they haven't had players that have been notable in the league. Then again, Peyton Hillis was on the cover of Madden a bunch of years ago, so go figure.
Yeah, you know, I think it's cool. I think it's neat. I think it's one of those things that it's cool to talk about, but then you kind of forget about it, except for like the Madden curse, which so the Madden curse for our viewers who do better things with their time instead of playing video games, is essentially this idea that like whatever cover athlete is on the cover kind of has like a really, really bad year. So Peyton Hillis being the like kind of the big example, after he got on the cover of Madden, his career completely plateaued. It was really, really odd how quickly he kind of started struggling running the ball in the NFL, and he was out of the NFL after a couple of years. Mm-hmm. But like in general, I think you know, like the Bills didn't really have like a super great year when they're on the cover. Same with Lamar Jackson. Like there's this like weird like kind of regression, which obviously is just because when you get on the cover, it's mostly because you had a phenomenal year.
Right.
And it's really hard to maintain that year over year. But, you know, conspiracy theories abound everywhere.
I think Patrick Mahomes won a Super Bowl the year that he was on the cover.
Well, you know, he and Tom Brady are a little little different. They're immune to all that stuff. But my a friend of mine actually had a really, really great point, which is kind of morose, but I think fits perfectly. We were talking about the Madden curse, and he said, well, I don't really care about a curse. It's not like the Niners have won a Super Bowl when they're not cursed anyway. So why does it matter? So
that's mean, but it's fair.
So that's kind of my mentality on it. I think it's a really cool honor. You know, hopefully, I think people who watch football know how good Christian McCaffrey is. Hopefully it gets his name out there a little more in terms of just like being one of the more dominant athletes we have in the sport and overall. And yeah, it'll be super cool.
Yeah. Looking forward to picking that one up. All right. So we're going to keep on the money track. I said this was the money episode. So I'm not sure if you saw this, but I haven't seen anything like real strong footed about this. Like, I don't think I've seen this come out of like any like national news, but I did see rumblings that Trent Williams, who is heading into his year 36 season this year, has 3 more years essentially on the extension that he signed, the 6-year extension that he signed with the 49ers back in 2021. But it's all rumblings. Again, I don't know where this is coming from necessarily, that he is interested in talking contract extensions with the 49ers. Timing seems a little strange on that, again, talking about the McCaffrey thing. Again, he's got 3 more years, including this next season. His cap hit in 2024 will be $31.5 million, in 2025, $34 million, and in 2026, just a shade under $37.8 million. Now, I'm not sure. Obviously, he's got to get that money that they owe him. He'll be 38 when that contract ends. He says that he's not really thinking about retirement, but that, of course, is 3 years from now. I don't know. It doesn't seem, again, I haven't seen anything like super substantiated about it, but it isn't something interesting to consider. And when I was thinking about it, I was thinking that he was closer to the end of his deal. And if he was closer to the end of his deal and it's like, oh, well, I think I want to play 2 more seasons, yeah, sign him up. But I don't know. I feel like 3 years might be, who knows? We'll see. Maybe this is something we revisit in a couple of years at this point, but I don't think you need to touch it at this particular juncture.
I agree. I think I was reading a little more in the report. It was Jeremy Fowler kind of mentioned it in mm-hmm. passing. And then when obviously a lot of local and like 49er fans were like, what do you mean he needs a new contract? He kind of got on the air and explained that he hasn't heard this from like Trent Williams, his camp, or from like anyone in the Niners. It's more like league speculation.
Yeah, okay.
And I think the logic makes sense to me. Trent's going to be the 4th highest paid lineman in the NFL. And even if you give a slight like age discount, he's like by far and away the best like left tackle or offensive lineman in football right now. So I could see him getting like one final like contract adjustment to kind of put him back up to that level, because he set the standard. Then always you get jumped. That's why it's important that for teams anyway, we're trying to like maximize their cap space to get contracts done early, because everyone wants to beat the last guy. That's kind of how this goes. I agree with you. I can't see him getting a second contract. I know he said he doesn't want to retire and he has a couple of years left. So I would find it very, very odd. I think he's too talented, has gone through a lot. I don't really see Trent Williams being the guy who pushes it till he's like 41, 42 in the NFL. So who knows? I mean, I could see them giving him that like restructuring it a little bit and getting him a little more money, maybe freeing up some money on the cap 1 year. But mm-hmm. I agree with you. I don't think it's something they need to touch. I think it's something they could. But it's kind of a non-issue for me as of right now.
Yeah, I agree. And if you look at the way that his contract is structured, some of the other contracts, that void year is like a pretty massive amount of money. It's his void year in 2027 is only $3.6 million in 2027. Who knows where the salary cap will be at that point? That may be a drop in the bucket by that particular point. Now and unlike other contracts, while his salary cap hit does rise, it doesn't rise to the point where like we were talking about the McCaffrey contract, where he's at like 6 and he's at 9 and then all of a sudden he's at 25, right? Trent's kind of goes up with where the salary cap is expected to be based on these numbers that they fire. So it's not like they're looking at that 2026 season and they're going, oh man, that number is just out of control. Like, we put in this $50 million cap hit for the final season of the deal and we're not going to be able to pay that. So I think it's probably manageable in the long run. Now, again, if you get to the end of next year and you're like, okay, and he says, yeah, I feel like I have 2 more years. I feel like I could do 3. Let's tack on another year at the end of this thing. I don't have a problem with that. And especially if they want to rework the money to get him over whoever that that next highest paid guy. I think it's Penei Sewell at the moment, but I can't imagine by next year that will still be the case, but we'll see. All right. So you mentioned a really key phrase, this idea of getting contracts done early. Speaking of contracts that are not getting done early, the scuttle is that the Brandon Ayuk contract is not going anywhere. He did not attend OTAs. He has not been on site, so far as anyone can tell. I don't know. I'm not getting terribly worried yet, but I'm definitely moving because most of these deals, the Kittle deal and the Fred Warner deal, and I'm trying to think of the other ones, because obviously Nick Bosa was an outlier. His went to September. That was bad. That's not what we want here. But I think for the most part, everybody else has been, right before training camp, so early to mid-July. So when we get to that point, I think that's going to be the point at which I'm going to start having real concern that this is not going to get done. But at this point, I'm kind of like, all right, well, this is kind of how they operate. So I love this is how they operate. No. Do I wish that they would try to set the market as opposed to waiting it out for so long? 100%. But what are you going to do at this point? This is kind of the way that they've set up how they do this. And it's not like you can, they probably should have stopped this before it started. Right. With the first deal, I think it was Kittle. Is that right? Is that the first one? If I'm not mistaken, in this string of deals, technically, I think Trent Williams, but he got his done pretty quick, pretty soon. But yeah, so it's, I don't know. What are your thoughts on it? There's a lot of different directions we could take this conversation for sure.
So I also wrote a quick article about this, which I think is a little more on the nose, which was the most recent contract. I think it was Justin Jefferson's. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of is like the perfect sign of, okay, the Niners are kind of boxed in, because reports are saying that their offer's in the $26 million range, which, like, if you throw away all the comparatives of wide receiver contracts, I think that's pretty reasonable for Brandon Ayuk, who's going to be your number one receiver, but maybe has, like, a step or two to go before he's, like, the elite of the elite, like, top receiver in the NFL, can do everything. Like, he can get there, but he's not there right now. But you can't offer him $26 million when Amon-Ra St. Brown got 30, when Justin Jefferson's at 34, where I think A.J. Brown is somewhere around like 30 and 29 now.
Yeah.
And where and CeeDee Lamb is like watching this, and he's going to slot in between 30 and 34, right, almost certainly. And this is what I meant by you got to get contracts done early. Everything is a comparison. I mean, the Deebo Samuel contract negotiations, I think, sometimes we forget about this because they're two very different players. It was happening in tandem with the Seahawks extending Metcalf, and it became a really interesting, like, who's going to go first thing, which was even more interesting because it was negotiated by the same agent. And what ended up happening was, I think if I remember correctly, Deebo got more AAV, perhaps, but Metcalf got more guaranteed money. In some way, they kind of like, they both reached the top of the, like, of their respective contracts. And I think it's really, really interesting. It might be the other way.
It looks like Metcalf is just a hair over on both ends, but just barely. Metcalf, 24. AAV, Deebo is at 23.85, and this is all, again, coming from Spotrac. Total guarantees, this is hilarious, because as you were saying it, I was looking at it. Their total guarantees were $100,000 off of one another. DK got 58.2, Deebo got 58.1.
Right, I mean, like, this is the whole thing. This is literally, like, this is how contracts are done, and, like, the NFL, which doesn't have, like, a cap on how much you can pay a player. It's just, what did the next guy get? I think I'm as good at him, or even if I'm not, I'm basically there. Pay me more. Mm-hmm. And the Niners, I think, I agree. I'm not worried, per se, right now. I think they'll come around to terms with Ayuk. honestly think they'd blink before Ayuk does, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
But I think the reason they'll blink is because they took too long.
Right.
And, I mean, you kind of – you give credit to, like, teams like the Lions and the Eagles who kind of, like, jumped it and, like, were like, okay, let's just get this done. And they probably paid a premium for it. But the problem is you now have to, like, really explicitly decide how good is Brandon Ayuk in comparison to Amon-Ra St. Brown, A.J. Brown, CeeDee Lamb, and Justin Jefferson.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this box right now of salaries. And I don't know, like I think Ayuk's phenomenal. And I think if you took him in any of those other offenses, his numbers would skyrocket. But that's a lot of speculation, right? You only have what you see. And I can't, like, tell you for sure that I would rather have, like, Brandon Ayuk on my team than Amon-Ra St. Brown, or Brandon Ayuk than A.J. Brown.
Right.
So now, like, I think this is where the worry comes from, is that I can see why the Niners are at 26 and don't want to go up much higher. I can also see why Brandon Ayuk wants $30 million, and once he gets that, he's good to go. And I just don't know, like, this seems like a different kind of impasse than, like, Debo or Kittle. This seems like one where there's, like, a fundamental, like, misidentification of value going on both sides. But I think the difference is that I think Brandon Ayuk's right. Normally, I think, like, it's somewhere in the middle. I just think Ayuk's right. Like, I think the Niners have to pay him closer to 30.
Right.
And I think Albert Breer just came out and said if he had to predict, he'd predict a contract with a $29 million AAV. I honestly think that would be a steal for the Niners at this point, because it's taken them too long and too many teams have jumped ahead of them. So, yeah, 29, 30, 31, I think that's where this is going to end up. And the Niners are basically taking advantage of the time that they have, and the fact that they have the franchise tag and the fifth-year option kind of in their pocket to kind of leverage Ayuk down. I just don't think it's going to work.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
Yeah. Well, and it also might be a bluff, because they just don't use those things, right? They've pretty much always gotten their first round picks. Either they let them go and not keep them around on the fifth year option, or they pick up the fifth year option, but then sign them to a contract extension before that kicks in, partially because those fifth year option numbers are kind of ludicrous. So just looking at it, so there's been three major wide receiver contracts that have been signed this offseason so far. Jalen Waddle in Miami, he's at 28.25 for his contract average, which actually slides underneath his own teammate Tyreek Hill, who's still the fourth in terms of annual average value. At the position. Amon-Ra St. Brown, just a hair. This is so weird. He slides in at 30. He's at $30,025,000. So he makes $2,500 more per year than Tyreek Hill does. Which is just like, I gotcha. Like, look at me. I make more than you. So that's where St. Brown is. A.J. Brown at $32 million, and then Justin Jefferson, $35 million. I think the real thing to watch for, of course, is totally guaranteed money. And I think that's going to be the thing that's going to be most interesting. Waddle got $76 million. St. Brown got $77 million. A.J. Brown got $84 million, and then Justin Jefferson got $110 million. Obviously, nobody's talking anywhere about Ayuk being anywhere near Justin Jefferson. Justin Jefferson is insane. The thing that the Vikings might have forgotten is that they don't have a quarterback, but that's neither here nor there. Justin Jefferson might be the first guy to throw the ball to himself. getting Sam Darnold. Go you. Yes. I don't know. So I think that will be interesting. I think as long as I think the long and the short of it is the contract, the AAV, they're not going to be able to get $26 million, just for the record, would put him under Cooper Kupp, who's at 26.7 in annual average value. Cooper Kupp signed that contract extension in 2022. That was 2 years ago, and he's got two more years left on that deal. So I just don't think there's any way they're getting away with that. Devontae Adams has a $28 million average on a contract extension that he signed. Hold on. In 2022 as well. So he one-upped Cooper Kupp. And then it's Jalen Waddle, Tyreek Hill. But yeah, I think the 49ers are just going to have to, like, they're not going to get him at $26 million. This is not happening. And if they think they're going to use those other pieces of leverage to get him to do that, I'm just not sure it's going to work out. And I think it's going to create a bad relationship if they try to do that. So I think you're right. I think the 49ers are going to have to decide, is he the guy that we want to keep around? And if he is, we just got to make him happy, or else we're standing to, because otherwise what you're doing is you're going to keep a player who doesn't really want to be with on your team and is not happy about his contract situation. And sure, you can do that for 3 years. You could have him on the fifth year option next year. You could franchise tag him next year. You could franchise tag him in 25, franchise tag him again in 26. But at that point, you got a guy who's been around for 3 years, who is probably just madder than he could be. And at that point, he's gone, right? Like, there's no way he's sticking around. So I think that's just not a wise thing to do. But yeah, I'm not worried yet, but I am interested to see how it's going to go. Do you think there is any chance that, because the other way this goes is they just say, you know what, we want to keep you around, but we can't do it. It's just, it's not a matter of whether or not we want to give you that money. It's just a matter of being able to, you can't sign everybody. At some point, they're going to have to make a decision about someone, and maybe they would prefer to keep Ayuk in the long run, but he just happened to come after Deebo Samuel, and so that's kind of the way this works out. I don't know. It will be interesting to see. There's also the possibility that they let him play on the fifth year option and then try to work this out next year, but gosh, I can't imagine wanting to. If you think having this conversation with just him as your main focus is hard, imagine trying to do this plus a quarterback contract at the same time. That seems like a really bad idea.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they need to get it done. I think the one thing I'll say is that I think they've basically decided internally, and this is like wild and rampant speculation on my part, basically just off of what I feel like I'm seeing from all the reports and their actions. I think they've decided that Ayuk's the guy they're keeping and Deebo's right. The guy they're getting rid of if they have to get rid of someone. I'm pretty sure that's where we're at. So it just becomes a question of they're trying to get a deal on Ayuk because they want to squeeze every dollar they can. So that way when Brock Purdy's up for a contract, you know, they don't have to get rid of too many players. But I mean, I agree. Like, I think this is most similar to me to the Nick Bosa contract extension, which you mentioned ran on for a really long time. And the Bosa thing was interesting just because Bosa was, like, so good that there wasn't, like, an easy number to reach because it was literally, how do we, like, he's going to be the highest paid, like, non-quarterback. What does that mean? Like, what can we give him that's reasonable when there's no upper limit? You know, like, the Deebo one was interesting because Deebo wanted money for being a running back, essentially, and he was coming off, like, one of the best years I think a receiver has had, especially adding in the running as just an offensive weapon. Fred Warner, kind of same thing, although that was kind of naturally depressed. Warner and I think Kittle's contracts were similar, but because they play positions that are, like, devalued, it's a little easier because you're not so much, like, really getting after it. You're not like worried about, okay, is this going to run me to 30 million? Because that's just like the comparatives depress the market so much. But yeah, this might be the hardest or second hardest negotiation they'll have. And I think the longer they let it sit, the worse it's going to go. I don't know like what the value is in like these extra like 3 million a year per se.
Speaking of Bosa, I'm just looking at his numbers really quickly. So it looks like they're gonna probably have to do this with redo this his deal with him in the not terribly distant, probably after the 2025 season, where his cap number jumps from $20.5 million to $42 million in 2026. Somehow, I don't think they're gonna let him play on a $42 million cap hit, but we'll see how that goes. One thing popped into my head actually as you were talking about Kittle, and that was the Niners did actually make another move, I think just prior to OTAs, and that was they brought in Logan Thomas, the former Washington. Was he a Commander at one point? I suppose he was. He played for Washington at some point. He's a tight end. He's a little bit older guy, but they did bring him in to compete at the second tight end position. Interesting for sure. I think it's I don't know. I think he can be a useful player, Logan Thomas. It's a veteran minimum contract, it looks like. So not a big deal, but I think if frankly if I were Cameron Latu and Braden Willis, I would be very concerned about this move personally. Just me. I think it could be useful. Like he's been again a useful player in Washington. But yeah, former quarterback actually at Virginia Tech. Been around the league for a while, but I don't know. I don't think it's a nothing move is what I'm trying to say, even though it seems like a kind of like a last minute, like of all the waves of free agency have gone out. But I think it could be at least have a small impact in that you look at Logan Thomas and you're like, oh, okay, he's a useful player, and I'm not gonna be, I'm not, you know, if Kittle has to come out for a little while, I'm not gonna like be sh like, okay, well, nobody's gonna be paying any attention to the tight end now at this point. I'm not sure.
No, I agree. I mean, I think it's a really, really great move. I think Logan Thomas, for what the Niners are going to ask him to do, can really, really add another dimension to this offense that they desperately need. This offense needs a second tight end that can catch the ball. And I also agree that Cameron Latu and Braden Willis, this is a big, like, flashing, like, red light saying danger, danger, because the Niners, they'll do this. I think this is the most interesting thing they do. For any player that they draft reasonably high, they give him 1 year. You get 1 year where it's like, okay, you're not ready. That's fine. We'll kind of keep you on the roster. But like, it's showtime now. And if they don't compete and they're not ready to perform, that's it. The Niners will cut bait with him. So I think at the very least, Thomas can add a good receiving element to the tight end room. I think he'll probably be more situational. He's not like because the Niners are like searching for Jordan Reed essentially in the COVID season, who was the ultimate second tight end. And if it wasn't for his like history with concussions, would probably potentially still be on the roster because he was just a perfect fit. He absolutely dominated in that role. But I think Thomas can give you aspects of that. So I like the signing. And I agree. I don't think it's a nothing move. I think like he's a guy I could see staying on the team.
I would say this, it's more concerning for Latu than it is Braden Willis, who Latu had such a wretched training camp and probably was on the verge of not making the team at all last year. But for his injury, I think there's a pretty good chance that if he had not gotten hurt, that he probably would be somewhere else already, like that they would have cut him and that would have been the end of it. So I think this lot, I mean, Braden Willis has the, I mean, he played snaps in the Super Bowl. So, I mean, obviously some of that was out of necessity, but some of it was just he earned the right to be on the roster for that game. Mostly as a special teams player, but he was out there a little bit. So it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out. All right. So some final thoughts on this one. obviously we talked about this already. Minicamp OTA is already over. Akshaz, I know there were a couple of players that you wanted to highlight in terms of just some interesting one of whom we already mentioned, and that's Ricky Pearsall, and the other Renardo Green, the cornerback out of Florida State. It's just some guys that you're like, okay, they're showing out, and they seem to be making noise in OTAs for the 49ers so far.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's kind of hard right now to really say much. Kind of got to get pads on before you make any definitive claims. But I think the reports coming out of Santa Clara are really, really exciting for both these players. And I think with Pearsall, he's clicking with Purdy, which is, like, super necessary. That's the name of the game right now. And I think if he can, like, get to like a higher level than we all are expecting, can really make some noise in that like three-man receiver rotation, it's gonna be a huge deal, because Pearsall is like if you have to look at the 49ers receivers, Brandon Ayuk is the best is getting open by far. I mean, that's just like bread and butter. His route running is incredible. Juwan Jennings has some like absolutely nasty moves off the line of scrimmage, but he's really slow, which kind of like limits how much separation he can make, because like corners can catch up to him. And Debo's not the best at like creating natural separation through his routes. He's more of a guy you get the ball to in space. So Pearsall, if he's able to progress the way OTAs seem to be describing him as, is another guy that you can potentially throw into a game against a top corner, just have him like get open and win. And you know, the Super Bowl, that was the 49ers offensive downfall, was that they just couldn't get open against the Kansas City corners. So I think that's a really big sign. Then Renardo Green, I just think every single like camp report I hear, OTA report, is just he's incredibly like sticky. He's always in the right place. He's aggressive. He's loud. He plays really, really strong. And I think this is a huge deal, because, you know, the 49ers have their entire cornerback room up for contract after this year. So something's going to be changing. And I think like getting like a playmaker in the secondary and someone who can like really lock in is going to be a big deal, because again, the 49ers had two good corners throughout the entire year last year, and they needed three. And they just couldn't find that third one, no matter what. It was Ambry Thomas was up and down throughout the entire year. Logan Ryan ended up playing slot corner snaps in the Super Bowl. I mean, they were hunting for someone. Yeah. And as a side note, I also think Isaac Yiadom, who is their free agent signing, has been really good, apparently, in OTAs. He's going to be, I think, this is a little more rambly than I wanted it to be, but I just think with the secondary, it kind of gets that way, because I don't know how Nick Sorensen wants the secondary to play. I don't know what Brandon Staley's going to like add in for how the secondary is going to play. But I do know is that they have a couple players now who like to get in receivers' faces and press them the entire way through and get physical with them. And I think that opens up a ton of possibilities. So I'm excited that the 49ers top two picks are playing well. That doesn't always happen. In fact, I think the 49ers very much struggle when it comes to early round picks. So I'm liking the positive news right now. And I just think, you know, these are like positions where if you can get guys who really are making it, it can give that team the extra level they needed. We're heading into this very important year.
Yeah. Well, and apparently Daniel Bullock, who's the 49ers defensive backs coach, was talking about how like they apparently were throwing both slot stuff and outside corner stuff at Renardo Green, and he was apparently very impressed with how he's handling both of them. Obviously, like you said, we'll see what will happen with the once the pads go on and everything. But if he could have the flexibility to do both, or if he just flies and takes that slot corner position as a rookie, man, how much better would that make things, where you don't have to move D'Amador Lenore around? He can just be your other outside corner opposite Charvarius Ward. Bam, you're good. There's your three. Isaac Yiadom, maybe Rakia Sin, one of those other veterans or one of the other young guys, steps in as your fourth or fifth guy, I think you're in business. If Renardo Green proves to be like a starter from day one, I think you're in like really great shape. For sure. I wanted to also highlight someone that Fred Warner apparently is super hyped about. And what I think if Fred Warner talks about, a fellow linebacker, he seems to know what he's talking about. Fred is not, was not participating in OTAs. He was there, but not, I think he had a surgery of some kind in the off season. So he hasn't been participating, but he's been out there, and he apparently said that D Winters has been the most improved player, this off season. And gosh, with Dre Greenlaw missing probably half of the season with that Achilles injury, I would think, conservatively, if D Winters could somehow step in, and this is, no disrespect to DeVondre Campbell, but if D Winters could step in and actually be the second linebacker next to Green or next to Warner while Greenlaw is out, that would be just an incredible thing for them to not have to have a young guy who could step in to that position and really take the lead in that area. I think that'd just be just a really good thing for the team as a whole, because they need that. That's one thing that they're an older team, and that's been one thing that's been talked about them a lot. And it would be really nice to see, a young guy take over, at the slot corner position, at the second linebacker position, because I think Greenlaw is also a free agent after this season. Next year is going to be wild. Next offseason is going to be super wild. So I think that would be huge. Like if D Winters proves to be good enough to be a defensive player, either linebacker two, or if he's splitting time with Campbell at two and three, depending on the situation, I think that would be really good news for the 49ers.
Yeah, I agree. One thing about D Winters is he's fast.
Yeah.
And that's kind of it's kind of a nothing burger when you say it out loud, but it means a lot for linebackers in the 49ers system, because you got to go sideline to sideline, up and down, cover a huge part of the field. And I agree. I think, I was super excited by both the young linebackers, Winters and Graham, last year. I think we were talking about it when we were thinking about the roster breakdown. I was really hoping they kept both on the roster. They did, but then they proceeded to not play him at all, which was less fun. But it happens sometimes. But yeah, I think Winters is like a physical specimen, which is awesome. And he's really starting to pick up the defense, and he's playing fast. Jalen Graham has been trained on every linebacker spot already. So if either one of those guys is able to make that step, that's a huge deal for the Niners, not least because, like you mentioned, Dre Greenlaw's contract is coming up and he's recovering from an Achilles. But also, that third linebacker spot has been kind of up and down, I'd say, in the last year or so. Azeez Al-Shaair kind of solidified it when he was here, but then he went off to Tennessee. So getting someone there who can really, really play well is really a big deal, because it just gives your defense more leverage, more opportunities, and it insulates you from injuries. I mean, not to harp on the February game that happened this year, but
I don't recall it.
Me neither. Maybe it was a collective dream. But, Dre Greenlaw's injury really had an impact on how the Niners were able to play Kelce and the Chiefs often. And a lot of that had to do with Oren Burks, Oren Burks, fantastic special teams player, really important part of the Niners when he was here, but not able to really cover Kelce. And the numbers just from when Greenlaw got hurt to after of Kelce's stats skyrocketed. Mm. So being able to have another guy who can handle these elite receivers, elite tight ends and running backs, always, always a good thing.
Yeah. Certainly even more problematic from Kelce. Kelce's still a very good tight end, but he's no spring chicken, and he's not as fast as he used to be. So the fact that Oren Burks could not keep up with him is a little problematic. So anyway, we move on. We don't have to talk about that game anything anymore. It's gone. It's done and dusted. All right. So I think that pretty much wraps things up for us for this episode. We talked about a lot of money. We talked many millions of dollars, none of which we have. So there we go. Akshaz, we're pretty much on. I mean, we may pop in from time to time, but again, until training camp starts, there won't be a whole lot of things to talk about. So do you have any final things that you'd like to convey to our audience before we you know take a little break from the podcast until training camp kicks into gear?
Well, of course, you know, we might not be serenading your ears with our excellent insights, but we will be writing things on the Niner Noise website. So if you're missing us, you can always read one of our articles and imagine us talking about it to you. But beyond that, you know, it's the slow season. It's a lot of like speculation about the next year, a lot of like excitement about what it may look like. And I think, you know, we've been kind of pragmatic on this podcast about the Niners and where they're at. It's been a lot of, okay, we know they're good, but they got to win a Super Bowl now. So I don't really want to start thinking until it gets to January, but I'd say, you know,
yeah,
into July, it's fun to kind of like lean into, you know, the excitement of the year. There's a lot of stuff going on and, you know, Niner Noise will be there for you the entire way through.
100%. Well said, as always. So keep checking out the site, and we'll be there for you even when we're not. But as usual, thanks for listening to this episode of the Niner Noise podcast, which is part of the Fansided Podcast Network. As Akshaz says, please continue to check out ninernoise.com for all your latest 49ers news and analysis, and be sure to rate and subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen. And of course, share it with all your fellow 49er fan friends. So until next time, let's sound the horn, 49ers.